Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara I gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthchar san I lis dúthail agus go mbeadh fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhíonn ann tar d'oraibh sé sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Hello and you're welcome to the Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weck, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent. And this week we're talking about what Apple's going to have in its virtual product announcements over the next couple of weeks and one or two other items. I'm joined by Michael Cogley, technology correspondent of the Daily Telegraph from London, and Fergal O'Connor, deputy business editor of the Sunday Independent. You're both welcome to the Vlogcast.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
It's like great old, to be here.
It's like old times, isn't it? When we sat across from each other.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. All three of us.
Remember when we used to work in offices?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I've forgotten what that's like. I can't see that ever coming back again, whatever that old banished memory was.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. First, Apple. So it's this time of year, I don't mind telling you, I would normally be basking in the San Francisco smog, getting ready to go to big launch. And good morning, Tim Cook's big mellifluous greeting at obviously not happening this year in person, but we do know there's going to be a few products. So it looks like they're splitting up the announcements. There will be an iPhone 12, four models, in fact, but it's not going to be next week. It's going to be iPad and the watch, according to Mark Gurman from Bloomberg. And he's the guru. Everybody goes by what he says. But I'm just going to skip the iPad and the watch for a second. I'm going to focus on the iPhone 12 for 1 second. We're looking at four models, two basic models, the iPhone 12, and then two Pro models. All of them are going to have the OLED screen, and all of them will be 5G. Is there anything either of you are looking forward to or with this new iPhone?
I think for me, 5G is now past the point of, you know, it really needs to be in the phone to draw people to spend big money now, because if it's not in all four models, you're really kind of questioning why would I shell out upwards of 800 quid for a model that might actually be redundant in a very short space of time. So that's the bare minimum. Beyond that, it's great to hear that the OLED screens are going across the board. As someone who still owns an XOR, which is the old LCD screen, like the best of the LCD, it's kind of great to hear that they're finally doing away with it, because it's really dated now. So if they had brought out the 12s without that, I think it would have been disappointing. Beyond that, I'd like to see a new form factor, but it doesn't look like that will happen. You might see you might see squared edges and things like that, but it looks like the notch is going to be here to stay, which I'd say is a little bit disappointing when you look at the hole punch and stuff like that.
Yeah, Marcus Brownlee is not going to be happy with that. The the side that you mentioned, the frame of the iPhone, it's widely speculated that it's going to look a little bit like the iPad Pro, which that lovely flat side. First we saw it on the iPhone 4 and then the iPhone 4S, and then we saw it on the iPhone 5. And also with the older iPhone SE, it is a gorgeous form factor, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's probably when they're at their best. And even if you look at the new, well, not new, but since 15, 16, 17 onwards of the MacBook Pros, they're those kind of squared edges as well. And it just looks a lot more clean cut and modern than the older curved edges, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Fergal, you're a little bit more of an Android guy.
A little bit more. I've never owned an iPhone. So I kind of feel right now like when we used to sit together in Talbot Street and Michael would talk a lot about Spurs and I'd sort of drift off and I'd go, nothing here to inspire me.
Well, now, to be fair.
So
So am I like Apple, nothing to inspire you, basically?
No. You inspire me, but talk of Spurs and iPhones, neither does it for me. I've always preferred the Android, and even before that, I preferred the old, I don't know, you'll remember it, Adrian, I'm sure you do too, Michael, the old Nokia Symbian system. I clung to that while everyone else was buying their iPhones, and then eventually I switched to Android.
But I
find these days that there's so little difference between, like, the high-end phones from Samsung, from Apple, from Huawei. They're great pieces of kit.
Well, it's interesting because
I don't get as excited anymore.
I was talking about this last week, but the phone I'm using as a driver at the moment, just because I've been testing it, is this one here, which is the fold-out phone, you know.
Oh, Samsung. Wow. Now I'm excited.
Okay. I'm going to put that away.
That's kind of cool.
Put that away. But just in terms of the actual new form factors, I mean, there are some new. But the other, Ben Thompson, who is a really interesting pundit, it caused a bit of a minor storm among geek circles during the week when he said that for the first time he had switched over to an Android smartphone. And he noticed what he felt was that the way he put it was the apps are garbage compared to the iPhone app. So now, it was a very crude point to use. I mean, he later wrote back on that, but he was kind of saying that in general, you have a slightly more reliable app experience on iOS, whether it's the iPhone or the iPad, than you do on Android. Now, Fergal, you, God bless you, you may not be able to compare the two, but...
it's not that I've used iPhones in the past. And it has that kind of solid, fluid feeling that it's maybe has always had that on Android, but I just love the flexibility of Android, you know, for...
They're also not as expensive. You can get a budget. You can get a proper budget, €179 Nokia 5.3.
I've the S10 Plus, the Samsung's S10 Plus, and I see the ads now on the TV for that. Is it the S20 Note? You're better on that. The new Note.
So there's the Note 20 Ultra, and then there's the Note 20, and then there's the S20 Plus, S20 Ultra, and now there's the Galaxy Z Fold 2 and the Galaxy Z Flip.
Now, I just think when I go into a phone shop and I look at the latest iPhone compared to some of those phones, to me, I just have no interest in the iPhone.
Okay.
So,
that's, Michael, are you still, you know, are your ears burning?
Sorry to do this.
No, not particularly. But I would kind of land that point at the smartphone category in general rather than just Apple. And even in spite of the new flip form factors and stuff like that, firstly, for me, I'm good with two devices. I don't mind. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll eat my words and everyone will have some kind of flip phone of some description, but I'm okay with having a tablet and a phone or a laptop and a phone or whatever. Mm. But also in terms of Apple staying with their current form factor for the foreseeable as well, I'm also okay with them waiting in the wings, let Samsung, let Microsoft work out the kinks with the folding phones first and then come in and do the proper one.
Well, you know what's interesting?
That Samsung one that you have is not up to par for the money.
It's 2,000 euro. I mean, it's really expensive. Do you know what's funny about this is what I noticed was it's really, you can see it's sort of slim, right? Now, most of the time when you're out and about, you end up using it like a normal phone. Like you're not walking along with it folded out like that, but you do that on the couch. The other thing is, you're right about, see the little crease there? Can you see the crease? See the crease?
Yeah.
See it there?
Yeah.
See the crease there? They are going to have to iron that out. But one thing, though, about Android, and this really came home to me when I was reviewing the new Galaxy Tab S7 Plus. It's Samsung's version of the iPad Pro. Very nice tablet in many ways. Costs almost €1,000. The apps, oh my God, where are the Android tablet apps? Slack, you know, loads of small business. Terrible. It was really quite a poor experience. Other than that, it was amazing. The tablet was amazing. Yeah. But there's no way you could use it as a substitute for an iPad Pro or a laptop, to me.
Mm. Well, they have a lot of inertia there with the iPad category as well, haven't they? They're at such a point where when they bring out the iPad Pros, they're fabulously well-made machines, but also the OS that they're tinkering with now, iPad OS, and moving on to the 14 version of it. Like, they're through so many iterations of working out problems now that they, it is the best tablet, and it probably will be for the considerable future.
I actually think, and you know me, I've been banging on about the iPad Pro for a couple of years because I was an early adopter in terms of the multitasking and the keyboard. But actually, if you look at a lot of the query, I do a column every week called Ask Adrian. It's just a regular help desk column. But I'm actually getting a lot of queries in about, should I get an iPad instead of a laptop? It's the first time that's ever really happened en masse. And if you look at some of the improvements that they're making, we might as well just talk about the iPad for 1 second, because that is what, that's one of the things that's going to be launched next week. They're talking about potentially a new iPad Air, which, if you look at the current iPad Air, is the previous iPad Pro. Like, for £550, you're essentially getting a device that connects to Apple's smart keyboard, 10.2-inch screen, can use the Apple Pencil, can pretty much do almost all of the laptop stuff that the current high-end iPad Pro can do. So they're now talking about a new iPad Air. One thing I would like to see, the webcam. I use an iPad Pro every day, right? And the webcam on is on the, it's at the top, it's at the side, and you put it horizontally. Yeah. So like when you're trying to do a Zoom call, you're like this half the time, you know? Oh, hi, how's it going?
A friend of mine got a Microsoft Surface there a few weeks back.
That is a nice machine.
I just thought it was, I mean, I'd never thought of it before. I used to use Chromebooks a lot. And I've just using a Windows, a very good Dell laptop for the price and everything. It's rock solid. But the Microsoft Surface, it just feels like it gives you the best of both worlds.
Is it a Surface Pro?
It's just the two-in-one, the
detachable.
The new kind of, I don't want to call it budget.
Surface Go 2.
So, yeah, that one. And it's just, like, I don't think you're going to do big, heavy duty projects on it.
I'm going to tell you about the Surface Go 2. There are two versions of the Surface Go 2, and I'm going to tell you which one to buy, and I'm going to tell you which one not to buy. Do not buy the entry-level one, because it has 4 gigabytes of RAM and Intel Pentium chip.
Yeah.
It's too slow. It can't, I had it on test for a while, and it couldn't do a lot of regular stuff that I wanted to do, or it would take 4 or 5 seconds to do. The upper level model, which is 8 gigabytes and an Intel i3 chip, absolutely fine. But now that's about £850 for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a budget machine.
No, I didn't want to call it a budget. What I meant by that was it's not the high end one. The one aimed at the mass market, I suppose. Whatever about the specs, just the use case of it is just nice to me. See, I think and it goes back to what you're saying about the apps on an Android phone. It doesn't bother me because I have fairly simple needs, and it meets all my needs, and it does them well.
Yeah, get a bit more ambition in your life, Fergal. I mean, what's all this need stuff?
I like to pared everything back. More productivity, less thinking about high-end tech and what it might do for me, and just getting on.
You'd never guess the two of us on this call are middle-aged, but anyway.
I guess.
I'll tell you, before we leave, have either of you ever tried Microsoft's Surface Studio, which is their kind of iMac? But it's
no.
Oh, no, oh, but it looks very cool.
Oh, if you ever get a chance to try that. It I'd say, in terms of Windows desktops, that is the one Windows desktop that you would go, oh my God. I could actually trade my iMac for that. I mean, it's that good. Now, it's also $4,000. So,
yeah.
But mind you, $4,000. You know what $4,000 is? It's two of these. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we're expecting an iPad. We're expecting a new Apple Watch as well next week. I don't know what they're going to put in. Maybe slightly better battery life. Maybe one or two more sensors. I know Google Maps is on there now, which has just come on, which is useful. But other than
long time coming.
I'm not sure. I don't know if that's going to be big news, the Apple Watch.
Well, I presume because it's the isn't they always drop hints in the invites, don't they? So time flies is probably the inference that
it's gonna fly.
The watch might be one of the big. Yeah, maybe the watch flies. Maybe who knows?
Maybe like David.
But I'd say one of the things that will probably come with it is the isn't it sleep tracking? Hasn't that been rumored for a long time? Now it's not exactly something that I personally want to use because I don't know. I don't want to know. I feel like it would screw up my head too much when I went to bed. I was like, oh, I'm not getting optimum sleep here. How do I improve on that? But beyond that, yeah, it'd be interesting what they do. I think they were talking about putting in a different type of screen on them as well, but that seems a while off as well. They haven't really, since the 4, the Apple Watch 4, they haven't seemed to have done any massive upgrades since.
The one advantage to the 5 was that it did have this always-on screen.
Really for other people, it's not you. For other people to see your screen.
because the always on screen dims quite a lot. That's there still is a bit of battery life you have to give up with it. So with the Series 5, for example, I would only reliably get just under 2 days, like maybe 1.75 days, whereas the Series 4 I was getting two plus days. That's all. That's the gear. That's the gadgets. Just fairly briefly, there was another story that was big in Ireland this week, and that was in relation to Google. They walked away from a lease from an office. Now that happened. That's largely a commercial property thing, but it sparked this whole debate over whether big tech is paring back in Dublin. And also the other thing, which I think is the one that catches the public's imagination a little bit more, whether or not it sparks a rethink, whether it has any significance for cities and for offices and going back to offices. And I have very strong views on this. I don't go with the prevailing narrative at all. Like the prevailing narrative being that we're all going to work for, 2 days from home from now on, that actually most of us are going to be, flexible working, that the office has had its heyday. I don't believe that at all.
I don't think so. I'm actually covering this story this weekend. And so I've spent the last few days talking to property people and tech people in around, with connections to the Docklands. And you have to come to those conversations with a degree of skepticism, definitely, because their job and their livelihoods is all about talking it up. But they do make good points. Like I think there was really there's potentially an overreaction to the Google story, but it possibly points at trends that were underway anyway in the Docklands, in terms of maybe that incredible boom that kind of happened over the last few years is definitely tapering out, partly because a lot of sites have been built out, but also because development finance is hard to come by now, or harder to come by for the big developers. But I think as well, the whole COVID thing has changed things, but it maybe not necessarily the way, as you say, not necessarily the way some people think. So yes, a lot of people are working remotely, but the other thing that developers will tell you is what they're hoping is that there may be less people in the office, but those people need more space because of social distancing. And those two things cancel each other out.
Fair enough for developers, to be honest. I'm not really that concerned on their behalf. I mean,
neither am I, but if things aren't working out for them, obviously it's suggesting that the market is changing and that those changes could be good for some people and bad for others, bad for the developers, but good for people who are looking for lower leases. So I'm not talking from their point of view, but I think it is interesting that the way they're seeing it is maybe less people in offices, so more remote working. But that means that the offices themselves change a little bit and they become this kind of hub and spoke where you are coming into the office quite regularly, but maybe you don't have your place in the corner that you used to have, that you'd spend 40 hours a week. You might only be spending 30 hours a week and you're taking your day or two at home.
You know, I've developed a filter here. And the filter in this whole conversation, not between us, but in this whole topic is, I'm probably getting into trouble for saying this, but filter is, I actually kind of disregard 80% of what middle-aged middle managers say on the subject, because I find the ingrained attitude and bias is so strong among people between the ages of, say, 35 and 55. It's absolutely unbelievable. And like, Michael, you're not 35 yet, right? So you're living in...
Close. He's close.
probably not as close as you are going the other way, actually.
But you're in London, right? And so you're
probably
not in the office that much right now.
No, we haven't been in since sometime in March, I think. We were very early being sent home as well. And we're not really under any great pressure to be sent back anytime soon either.
And we're the same.
I think your bias filter is probably to some extent correct. I mean, is there people who've worked all their lives in offices to get to the better part of the office, to get the better office, to get the better desk, to get the better autonomy of being able to come and go through the workday? That has now all been kind of taken away by this. So all the kind of in-office credits you've built up through the decades of working in the office are now not really worth anything until we go back again. So I can see why there would be the desire from kind of middle managers to get people back. From kind of the younger element of staff and stuff like that, from my perspective, I've done my job absolutely to a T as if I was in the office. And when you start to go... It's just very hard. And yes, there might be some drawbacks, there might be some limitations, but when the sell of it is, you know, an extra 200 euros a month in transport costs, it's an extra more time with your family, it's more time to exercise, more time yourself, it's better work-life balance. The trade-off isn't good enough anymore. Like, whoa. For me, if you, like...
We're completely opposite.
That's a privilege.
Yeah.
There's a privilege there in that, though, because... I suppose the three of us are in roles that you can quite easily do from home or from wherever. A lot of people aren't in, just by the nature of their jobs and the processes and et cetera, that's not got, like, where there's great difficulty doing their jobs at home. And even down to, you know, if you're living in an apartment, sharing it with two or three others, that's going to be a difficulty. Or if you're doing, on the flip side, if you're doing a call center job, say, for example, where the communication setup isn't there for you to be able to do that at home. So a lot of people just want, will be under pressure to go back to the office, I think.
Did you see what Reed Hastings said, Netflix boss?
Yeah.
He gave an interview.
Yeah, he doesn't see it working out successfully for a lot
he
of
hates
people.
He said there hasn't been one positive thing at all from...
Which is hilarious. Which is, well, maybe the positive from his point of view is that many people are now watching Netflix. More box sets during the day.
But from a working... So his point, now they have an extreme work culture in Netflix. It's a bit like Facebook's, but it's even more extreme, and they delegate to an unbelievable degree. Like, when you file an expense, you don't have to file an expense, you just buy it and you just claim it back. You don't have to put in receipts or anything. There's a massive amount of trust, but with that goes a culture that is insanely closely collaborative, and you can't really do that remotely. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sitting here in rural Mayo at the moment, on a Zoom call on mobile Wi-Fi. It's actually grand. I can actually work, no problem. I've had a pretty productive few days, no problem. But I like a colleague, an industry colleague of mine that I know, requested to go back into the office.
That's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean.
Because she was living in a small apartment, sharing with somebody else. And apart from the fact that she doesn't have her garden or her life partner or what, like, things that we have, right? Mm. Actually, I don't know about you from Michael, but I'm not going to get into that. apart from those social factors, like, she, you know, or and many young people in the business haven't yet establish themselves. They want to meet people. They want to learn a company culture. Yeah. They want to get in on the story. And that's tech companies in particular. There's a very strong element of that.
Mm.
And yeah, anyway, I kind of do think that there is a missing element to this conversation. And Reed Hastings comes across as a bad guy when he says it. He makes a good point badly made, but I don't disagree with him.
I think just to clarify, just in terms of the trade-off for going back in, there's obviously huge caveats to it, and there's absolutely certain professions that it won't suit perfectly. And I'm the same as a young person going back into the office. I do miss out. Like, I got 3 months over here before everything started to lock down, so I barely got to meet my colleagues and got up and running, and I realized that I'm very, very lucky as a new starter in a role to be able to have had that period beforehand. But what I think is, you're probably, and I don't think you're looking at the death of the office, but I do think the high likelihood is that you're going to start this rotational basis, this team on, team off stuff, especially if work is as portable as it is, if all your entire work suite is on your laptop, that wherever you go, you can just bring your work suite with you and you can carry on working as you were.
Mm.
And if you look at like what's happening in biometrics and logins and secure logins that's going into banking and all that kind of stuff, you can only see it really going one way. Like everything's being built to untether you from one place, basically.
Which is a very fair point. And there's, yeah, definitely a massive amount of infrastructure. Even before the pandemic, there was a lot going on to support that. Can I posit something which would freak a lot of people out on a number of levels? Here's a scenario for you. One year from now, people are allowed back to offices, but you're given the choice. So you're given, you know, flexible working. And many of the young people really want to get into the office for all the reasons we've talked about. Many of the settled family have to travel in 30 kilometers every day in the traffic, have to drop kids off to school. Older people don't, because it doesn't suit their lifestyle as much. The senior executives do, because they want to be there to run the business. Now, here's the scenario. You now have an office with a handful of the top bosses and executives who make all the decisions, and a bunch of people who are under 30 who are running around all eager and ambitious, and they're rubbing shoulders with the bosses. Now, you're one of those middle managers. You know, you're a 40-year-old middle manager, you're staying at home, you're out of the loop. It is possible that the reason that some people get so defensive about this, because there's a lot of passion about this as well. A lot of people who, you'll see them on Twitter and saying, you know, it's a disgrace. You know, the new rules should be flexible working. But what they mean is everybody should have to work flexibly and a few days at home. Because their nightmare scenario, unspoken, might be, now it only might be, that they're now being cut out of the promotion loop. They're at home looking after kids, and it's difficult to look after kids. It is a big job to raise a family, but they're at home now. The young people are in the office. They're hungry. They're, you know, dropping by the CEO's office all the time, and things move on.
Yeah, I worked years ago in, going back four publications maybe in my career. I was living down in Westmead. I worked out a kind of a deal to work a couple of days a week at home. And I did that for, I think it was about a year. And by the end of that, I felt completely out of the loop in that particular office. I missed out on a lot of the office politics. A lot of new people had joined that I didn't really know, because the days that I was in, I was just busy and I had my head in my own stuff.
Politics, it's culture, surely. I mean, we're kind of cynical about this idea of company culture, but it is a thing, isn't it?
Mm. No, it absolutely.
Yeah, no, you do. Yeah, office politics stroke culture. It is actually the same thing. It's and if you're not in the loop on some of that stuff, and if you don't know what's going on, you definitely can get left behind.
Absolutely. I think as well, on that point, a lot of what drew people to these modern companies, the likes of Google and Twitter and Facebook, whatever, was their company culture, was what it was like to work in there, was their amazing offices and all the benefits and perks that came with it. I just think that there's probably going to end up being some kind of balance, and it's going to take some tinkering in the same way that, you know, you bring out your folding phone, you have to work around the edges until you eventually get something that works. I think they're going to have to do something as well where people are going to desire and demand to be able to work from home a lot more frequently than they have been in the past. And the arguments against it are getting fewer and fewer. And even on a much bigger picture scale, I mean, the benefits for society in terms of the environmental footprint reduction is there for all to see. Like, it's clear as day. So it just looks like it can be, I'm sure there are ways for companies to set it up in such a way that's beneficial for its middle managers, that's beneficial for its young people, and beneficial for its older workers as well.
Do you know what's going to be interesting in terms of a test of all of it is when, because Google, to come back to Google, it has spent a fortune on new buildings that are yet to come online, Boland's Mill, Treasury buildings. It has pretty nice offices already on Barra Street in Dublin. The test is going to be how many people will actually want to go back. When they offer the flexible working, how many will want to be in the office? And for me, that's going to be, that'll sort of answer, because we're talking hypothetically about all of this. I think they are betting that most people will actually want to go back into the office. I think that's what they think, talking to people in there. I think it might be different if you're in a bank or an insurance company, but I don't know. I'm totally hypothesizing there.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like, you've also, I'm sure most people have done similar things. They've gone back to their home place, or like you, down to Mayo. Are Sligo, is it Mayo you're in?
Mayo, North Mayo, not far from the Sligo border.
It's funny when you start seeing people talking about, why do I live in Dublin? Why am I in a capital city? Why am I paying so much for rent when I can live in this house in the middle of nowhere with great internet and stuff? In some cases, great internet.
Well, there are good and bad things about living in the middle of nowhere. You know, there are good and bad things.
Yeah.
There's some bad
things.
Someone
who grew up in the middle of nowhere, there's a lot of bad things. Yeah.
Sometimes when you hear a creak in the middle of the night and you're the only house and you look and you think you see a movement outside, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's also, you know, the big like glass looking out into the dark fields and stuff, and you're like, oh, it's so nice, whatever, during the day it's nice, but then at nighttime, like, oh,
yeah, when the wind's blowing about 60 knots. Anyway,
there is a narrative in the residential property market that you have young people now moving back to their home place, buying cheaper accommodation, getting out of the rental market in Dublin. But is that really the case? I think that I'm not so sure there's too many.
It seems more at the high end. When I open my How to Spend It magazine from the FT, you know, on
which you often do
on a Saturday, they're full of pages and features about, you know, estate agents in the UK and even some in Ireland actually as well, saying that high end properties for wealthy fund managers they're buying, you know, 1.2 million euro bolt holes to work from for 6 months.
Yeah, that narrative of mass movement of residential property already kind of would send off alarm bells for me. I can't see there being huge waves of people who've already committed 100%. Yeah, let's move to the country now. I'm certain this is what's going to happen. And this is what the future is going to be like. So it just seems a bit early to be kind of to have, like you say, Fergal, that narrative is still there, that is there at the moment about residential, about young people moving out to the countryside. It's just hard to believe that they're absolutely convinced that this is what the future will hold. It'll just be remote working all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting read on Sunday. That's this Sunday, Fergal, is it?
Yeah. It's this Sunday.
Sunday 13th. That's going to be an interesting feature in the Sunday Independent. And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. So Fergal O'Connor, Deputy Business Editor, Sunday Independent, and Michael Cogley, Technology Correspondent, Daily Telegraph in London. Thanks very much for joining me today. And that is all we have time for. I have time for as well. So for me, Adrian Mackley, the tech editor in independent newspapers, I'll talk to you again same time next week. Bye-bye.